Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hello and welcome to True Romance. This is Carolina Barlow and I'm joined by
Devin Leary. It's Devin, D-E-V-I-N, and Leary, L-E-A-R-Y.
Get that down, folks.
You're gonna want to remember that name.
Oh, you're gonna remember that name someday.
I had a weird experience this week. Okay, it's perfectly normal to poop your pants sometimes. It happens.
I had an interesting experience this week. I shit my pants.
Oops, I crapped my pants.
Have you ever shit your pants before?
No, I haven't.
You don't want to do it. I don't recommend it.
I know, but this is the thing. It's like, it does happen to everyone, right?
It's going to happen to you someday.
So that is fucked up. That
till it happens to you,
you won't know how it feels.
I'm so immature. Stories of people shitting their pants. One time someone told me a story of themselves shitting their pants and I cried. Like I cried. Tears were falling down my face. I literally was like, stop, stop. I can't cry anymore. I had to go to the bathroom. Both my contacts fell out. And whenever I think about it, I'm like, why that? Why was that the thing that makes me cry from laughter? If we're going to jump into shit stories, I have to talk about one time in science class, this really quiet kid named Rob raised his hand and said, can I go to the nurse? And the teacher said, are you okay? And he said, yeah, I just have diarrhea. And it made me so happy. You just didn't give
Wait,
a fuck.
I just laughed so hard that my headphones fell off, so I didn't hear anything that you said after I have diarrhea.
And then one time, my parents signed me up for judo in middle school.
And it starts with judo in middle school, it's gonna be bad.
No, it was really sad. The coach's daughter was in the class, and me and the daughter were judo wrestling.
No.
And the girl's trying so hard she farted.
Okay.
And the whole class laughed so hard that the coach looked and yelled at them and she was like, I bet none of you have ever worked that hard.
Okay, this is Carolina's Foxcatcher story. It's is that she's
the coach was Steve Carell.
She's so talented at judo that she forced this innocent girl to strain so hard that she farted, and she probably has hemorrhoids because she was straining so hard and she was clenching.
I'm crying.
She was clenching.
Here again.
I'm sorry. I don't know how we got here. I don't know who we are and what we're talking about, but
you don't want to fight me in judo unless you want to shit your pants in public.
Unless you want to fart in public. And I, last note on farting, promise. Actually, two last notes on farting. Promise, One is that my friend Scott Herkman, when I was writer's assistant, when we worked together, we would be in like these giant meetings and I was writer's assistant. It was like a 30-person meeting. And he would constantly look across the room at me and go, "Hey, did you fart?" Like mouth, "Hey, did you fart? Did you fart?" Like, and mouth it. And I was like, always would cry laughing. And he would be like, "Oh, like, you farted?" I was like crying laughing every single time. And then the second thing is just that my biggest fear currently is farting on a Zoom. Like, I'm just like, no, like, I did this job where I was working on Zoom all day. And I was like, if I am unmuted and fart, I will just never recover. I will leave the industry I'm in. I will move to a flyover state. And I will grow a beard and be like, "Hey, my name's Jesse," for the rest of my life, because I'll be so embarrassed.
You don't want to know my story. We have a friend who was a kindergarten teacher, and she told me this story where the kids, I guess, just because they haven't grown shame over farting, just walk around like letting
Wait, what?
Yeah. And she said that one kid was sitting on another's lap and farted and then looked at them and said, "Hey, did you make me do that?"
Wait.
So that's my line now when I fart.
When does the
I'm
shame
like, "Hey,
start?
Did you make me do that?"
When does the shame start?
I don't know, but I wish it on no one.
I feel like having
what
kids...
What a society.
Having kids is just constantly like either having to explain death or having to explain sex or like them...
Teaching shame.
Them just like doing shameless things and you being like, you have to be different. So I guess
I
have a lot to learn. I'm going to watch the movie What to Expect When You're Expecting, starring Jennifer Lopez and Cameron Diaz, and then I'll learn how to be a mother.
Oh, you'll learn so much. I was one of those children who just walked around naked all the time. My parents were like very much hippies. And so from the ages like 3 to 10,
okay,
I was naked a lot in the woods because we would spend time in Vermont.
And I thought you were going to say we would do seances with dead goats.
Because my mom is a witch. I remember being 10, sitting at a dining room table with more than my family, like family, friends, people, and like just sitting down like butt to wooden table. And my mom saying, "I think it's time for you to start wearing clothes."
No.
And I remember looking down at like my bare vagina sitting on this chair and being like, "What did I like? What did something happen? Like, am I in trouble? Like, I'm so confused. Why do I have to start doing that?" And it was so confusing. We have to get to our guest today.
Without further ado.
Today on True Romance, we are joined by men. Yes, you've heard that right. This is for the men's rights activists who sometimes leave us beautiful and gentle comments on Apple Podcasts. We have heard your requests. We know that we are childless, pathetic women. And we really wanted to speak to you and encourage you to keep, you know, just give our podcast another chance. Please let us introduce you to Brian Husky and Charlie Sanders, the amazing hosts of Bald Talk, the show where the guys meet with fellow baldies, male and female, and discuss the politics, general shenanigans of being a bald baddie. You may know Brian Husky from Children's Hospital, Another Period, People of Earth. He did a cameo in a little movie called Step Brothers, a little indie comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he created, wrote, and starred in two Adult Swim specials, Mr. Neighbor's House and Mr. Neighbor's House, Duh. Charlie Sanders is an Emmy-nominated and WGA Award and Peabody Award winning writer. Blah, 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 blah. Must be nice. He's also a director, producer, and actor. You may know him from sketches on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, The League, with Bob and David. And he was also a writer and producer on all 5 seasons of Key and Peele. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the pod.
Thank you for letting our maleness into this sacred space.
It's a safe space for you here.
Now, was that a joke? Or do dudes really leave those kind of mean comments on your podcast?
A little bit. You know, I'm inflating my ego by acting like there's a whole movement against us, but
yeah.
We'll spurn that. Yeah, we'll cause that to happen, I'm sure.
Will's doing the comments? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's all Will.
That's crazy.
When I was in college, I had a blog called prayforthehaters.tumblr.com about how, like, everybody hated me. And one of my friends was like, I don't know if that many people really like think about you that much. Okay, fair. We did get an email from a man that wanted to let us know that we are that we are beautiful and we should have self-esteem and we should stop being so hard on ourselves and we should learn to love ourselves. It was very condescending.
Wow.
His intentions were good, but it was very much like, listen, ladies,
yeah,
be with someone who respects
you. Take it from
you.
Somebody who has whose opinion has more value than your own.
Exactly.
A man.
Yeah.
Take it from someone currently living in his mom's basement.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Email.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay.
I invited him to live in my own house. And it's like, I need to hear that every day. I need to be your little princess. I think it sounds a little similar. There's a Twitter thread a while ago that was like, when my girlfriend gets on her period, I make her a warm bath. I give her a massage. I make her whatever meal she wants. And like, I you know, I pet her and tell her how beautiful she still is. And it was like, wait, do you think like I don't know how to be on my period?
I know better how to be on a period than a woman
does. Do you
does.
Think I'm dying? Like, am I in hospice?
Yeah, this monthly punishment that God is putting down on you, I will save you from it.
This soiling.
Yeah.
This soiling.
This dirtying of your body.
Obviously, it is supposed to be painful for what you did to humanity, but I will make it as easy as possible.
You took that bite of the apple all those years ago, and now
exactly
you're being punished.
Yeah.
Speaking of Will, who wrote that Twitter thread,
I can't believe he's trolling you guys on Twitter. That's
I know.
Crazy.
It's so mean. No, it was so funny. So I obviously have known you guys. I used to be in the improv scene, so I've known of you guys forever, but it was so funny. So when the head of Big Money Players Network, which is our amazing producer, Hans, he was pitching some ideas to Will about podcasts he'd heard about. And I was just sitting with Will some random conference room, and Hans was like, there's this one podcast Brian Husky and Charlie Sanders are doing. It's just two bald men speaking to other bald people. It's called Bald Talk. And Will was like, yeah, we're going to be doing that.
Like,
oh,
really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No way.
Oh, we wouldn't have worked like, so hard in the pitch then.
Yeah. We just looked at each other and he was like, yep, that one is definitely going to be greenlit immediately.
Holy oh, that's shit. Amazing. I didn't know
that's
that.
That's great.
Hans withheld that information from us to make us.
Yeah.
Well, he's a mean, at his core, I think, emotionally manipulative person who likes others to feel tension
yeah,
and pain.
Yeah, he wanted more power over us. Because yeah. I remember after the meeting with you and Will Ferrell, me and Husky were texting each other being like, did that go well? I think that went well, right? I don't know. You know, blah,
there
blah, blah.
Lots of laughing.
And then
there was
Hans
lots of
said
laughing.
Nothing to us. So eventually I texted Hans being like, was that good? Are things good? And he was like, yeah, it's good. But
yeah. Can I ask, when did you guys come up with this? Was it initially just one of those things that was a joke that went too far and now that it's a job that you have to do?
I had the original idea years ago, probably 10 years ago. I was trying to make Ball Talk. But my idea for it was that it would be stupid. It'd be like a Conan sketch from 2004.
Right.
Like the joke would be, there's nothing to talk about. So we'd be like, hey, here's, you know, he's from the Royal Shakespeare Company and played Captain Picard, Sir Patrick Stewart.
Right.
Yeah.
So
what's it like to be bald?
What's it like to be bald? Yeah, exactly.
Just not focusing on their anything except for just like, yeah. So you're bald.
So it was just a joke podcast for me. So I had pitched it a bunch of places, but then I told it to told Husky about it, and he was like really psyched about it. And then he was like, we should make it about like male insecurities and shit. And that's
so mainly
because I needed a place that I could work out my shit.
It turned out he needed therapy.
Yeah. I have an idea. Maybe we talk about, I don't know, despair.
It's called Husky's Damage. It's a roundtable discussion about me.
But it was a real genius twist on it because we have found out as we've been interviewing people that there is a lot to fucking talk about it. I had no idea.
Yeah. My favorite ones are a lot of times people will come in. Like, if they come in hot about it, they ask us a lot of questions.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, they'll ask, like, our opinions on it. And that those are always my favorite ones where it kind of gets back and forth.
I enjoy that, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that something Devin and I talk a lot about is how women are more self-deprecating. In my experience, all of my friends are much more self-deprecating than the men I know. And I feel like male egos, especially in romantic relationships, are, like, a really big block in terms of us having a dialogue about the relationship. I don't know. It's just something that it's an impasse.
Conversely, I think women are more supportive of, like, in friendships and stuff, they're more supportive of one another, but men shit on each other more.
Yeah,
like,
that's true. That's
we will attack one another, but we... Maybe it's a reaction to that, like, and then we need to sort of be supported and you know.
That's a good point. Yeah, you don't really hear men when they're getting dumped, like the other guy being like, "You are a funny, hysterical, amazing guy," and she is psycho.
I gotta say, that's not my experience. I have a lot of dude friends that are very supportive. Yeah. I've literally had of dude friends say what you're saying to me.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But well, then I'm wrong twice, okay? Does that make you guys happy?
So wait, what blanket statements can we make about...
Yeah.
Let's find one blanket statement about men that we can make, and then...
I don't know. I have pretty good friends. They're nice.
I do too, but I think there's more space for... Maybe it's just comedy. I don't know. I feel like comedians sort of like filter through their true expression and feelings through through like joking and picking at each other and stuff.
Yeah.
But it makes me think of, like, I was thinking the other day... I was with a friend of mine. We were doing some shows in Colorado. So we were doing these shows and we got to ski during the day. It was like this great experience. And so I came out wearing my long underwear, getting ready to, you know, hit the slopes and put my pants on and stuff. And he was like, "What's up, chicken legs?" And it hurt my feelings so badly.
Oh, no.
Oh really?
Yeah, it really did. And I don't know why. Like, I was just like, oh, I mean, I've been working out lately. And it is just really funny that it really stuck with me, but I never brought it up to him, you know, because I just didn't.
Who was it?
Nick Kroll went for
Kroll?
Me. Kroll went at me.
He's like the nicest person in the world.
He's the nicest person in the world. But then he and I had this ongoing bit that was on my side where I would like post unflattering pictures of him on Twitter. And at one point he's like, "Hey man, can you stop putting these pictures up?"
Oh, no.
Like, they're really starting to bum me out.
He was getting revenge on me.
And I was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." Yeah, so who knows.
One of our close friends, Beth Jacobs and Devin, when we were younger, they like our sense of humor was just them ragging on me so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while we'd be
our sense of humor was that correct?
Yeah, it really was. You guys would just beat the shit out of me. And it was anything from like I used to use Sensodyne toothpaste and Beth was like, "Oh, you use Sensodyne toothpaste.
What's
you're
wrong
old.
With that?"
Oh, yeah. She just thought my teeth, which they are, my teeth are sensitive. And from that to once I thought I was mooning her, but forgot I was wearing Spanx. And Beth was so happy. She really took that one to the bank. But once in a while, I'd be like, "Hey, can you guys shut the fuck up?"
Yeah.
I know. And then we would be like, "Wait, this is bad. Should we?" But it's like an addiction. Like we can't stop it once we start. And we can't stop ragging.
It's weird.
But I guess... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it is strange that agreed upon space of like kind of like picking on one another and or being, you know, it's just a joke. Like I used to do that in my relationships. I would joke about something, but I wouldn't acknowledge that it hurt my partner's feelings.
Oh, interesting.
And so I would be offended that they weren't like... just setting their feelings aside and be like, "Just let me joke. You know, let's diminish this thing." You know,
yeah.
I wasn't giving how it made them feel or what I was talking about that it had weight for them. And so in a way, I was still trying to hold on to the power of the situation where I was like, "No, I have the right to joke. And if you cannot go along with the joke, then you're at fault as well as feeling bad about what I'm joking about." You know?
Right. Yeah.
So.
That's really interesting. I remember feeling that way in a relationship where I, you know, I think do what a lot of people in comedy do, where I'll like start the joke on myself first and foremost, point out something that I do. And then I remember a boyfriend sort of piling on top of that and like his friends too, and me being like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, let's cut this off too. You're not going to joke with your friends about how I dress like I think I'm going to Woodstock." You know,
yeah,
like
that's, not cool.
That's, you got to cut it short right there. But yeah, I guess what I was trying to say was that I think it's so cool that you guys have a podcast where men are encouraged, or not encouraged, men are supported to talk about these things that just are generally avoided. There's a whole wellness industry for women about self-acceptance and
Yeah.
I don't think that really is for men.
But I also, it comes up on the podcast, we kind of acknowledge that there's probably a wellness industry for women because you guys are saddled with so much That's messaging true. Of like, well, you should be this. Now you should be like this. You yeah. know, you should
Centuries.
Always be...
Eons yeah. of shit.
Your
cave women had like drawings on the wall of them thinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Had, like face tan.
Live up to this new standard of like how we draw you guys down. So.
Yeah, exactly. First things first, how good does it feel to take a shower without hair?
Oh, fucking great.
Right?
It's the
it
best.
Must.
Yes, yeah. It's the best.
When did you guys both start losing your hair? And when was your first... bald shower, balding shower.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about this quite a bit. The Husk Man and I have very different experiences in that yeah. I, maybe 23 or 24, I had been like, I think I'm going bald. And I had a lot of bald relatives. As soon as I was like, okay, it's happening, I shaved my head and I've never looked back.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my first bald shower would have been like 24 or something.
And mine was like, 16 or 17 was when I started to lose my hair.
Yeah.
And that dovetailed nicely with, you know, all the confidence you have at that age.
Naturally.
And a bright outlook for the future.
Right.
But I had, you know, my girlfriend, I had a girlfriend and we were really serious. And I told her, I was like, I think I'm going to lose my hair. And she laughed about it. And she's like, you're not losing your hair, but you would look so hilarious if you were bald.
No.
You know, it's that kind of thing. And she, right. I know she was leaning into like, it's not going to happen, you know, like diminishing it. But I was like, it is on. Like, this is happening. So I, you know, maybe my first bald shower was when I sort of admitted like it was starting. But yeah. it's been such a long process. It's been such a slow burn that like there have been, you know, phases where I'm like, am I bald? I guess I'm bald. I am bald now. Wait, was I bald then? I guess I was bald then, but it didn't feel like it, you know.
Right.
So I guess until all this stuff on the side's gone, I'm not bald. I mean, we're going to change the podcast.
Hey,
now.
What? What about our
You're
podcast?
Just in denial.
Just well, switch like, to heavy
Charlie,
into denial.
Charlie, talk about what you want. Like, talk about whatever you feel like.
I'm fine. I have hair on my head. You do not. So you are bald and I am not.
Did you ever try to cover this up? I know some people who do who have.
Nah, I investigated Rogaine like that, you know, in like the, what, like in college. So that would be like 88. To, you know, 90 or something. And it just was so expensive. And at that point, all the sort of like side effects sound so terrifying, especially to a college age. Like, you might like lose interest in sex. I was like, nope, I do not know.
I know.
That's like 70% of my life. So,
yeah. But it really was financially, I was like, I can't afford this. I just can't
right,
do it.
Right.
And then on top of that, I'm just not into meds. And so the idea that I was like
sure.
having to commit myself to something that was pumping into my body like
yeah,
forever.
That.
I was like, nah.
Yeah. I always think it's
yeah.
We talked about it on the podcast, but it's so ironic to be like, I'm gonna take a pill to get hair so I'm more sexually attractive to women, and then I'll lose my sex drive and yeah. I want to have sex.
And then I'll just apologize for laying there. I'm like, sorry.
It's not you.
Yeah, it's not you. It's the pill.
But aren't you enjoying my head full of hair?
Yeah.
There's no alternative besides just owning it. But when did you feel like you sort of started growing confidence with it?
I never had a confidence struggle with it. It didn't bother me.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like that with a lot of shit, though. I was like, I'm bald. That's cool. I don't got a problem with it. And I just started shaving it. And I felt no loss of confidence from it.
Yeah. And I think I was deeply insecure about it, but I would, and just back to what you're saying about sort of like self-deprecating, I would joke about it so much that
that's come up a lot on Bald Talk is people being like, oh, they joke about it so much.
Yeah, I think I would think I was sort of like claiming ownership by
yeah.
making fun of myself, but nobody else could make fun of me, you know? So it's that.
I'll say it before you do.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like, this is my territory and you can watch me. Sort of like poke fun at it, but don't pig pile onto it, you know.
I had a similar thing where I just like never hit puberty in my chest. I like always had like a really like absurdly flat chest.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just thinking like, I sort of identify with you, Charlie, where I was like, wait, I'm supposed to feel insecure about this, right?
Yeah.
But it's not happening.
Like, that's what like, I was like.
I'm just about being insecure.
People would like say like bald remarks to me occasionally, and I'd be like, yeah. I don't care that I'm bald. That doesn't hurt my feelings.
And whenever I got made fun of for it, it wasn't even that it made me self-conscious about it. It was more like, you're doing something rude, if that makes sense.
Yes. Like I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. It was like, I'm not becoming insecure because you've said this. It's more of, why would you say this? And why are you doing something rude to me?
It's yes. You'd be like, I'm not worried about the fact that I'm bald.
Right.
But I know that you're saying that to be mean. And why the fuck are you being mean to me? You know,
exactly.
Like that kind of
exactly. Yeah. I remember we had like I feel like so many schools went through this. But during finals week at my college, Devin, I think you had this at Vassar too. An anonymous commenting board website came up where you could just say so much shit about other people. And it's crazy.
ABCD? Was it Sarah Lawrence ABCD or Say Anything Sarah Lawrence?
Say Anything.
Jesus.
And people said everything.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
It's horrifying.
That's such an early version of the internet. It's like, oh, this is a wonderful platform where people can share it. Yeah.
What an opportunity for people to learn so much.
Yeah. That's when Will first started trolling people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He was all over Say Anything Sarah Lawrence. Yeah.
Say what you really think.
They were like, who's at Anchorman69?
There was a thread where someone started and said, like, flattest girls in school. And me and my friend high. We were super stoned, and my friend looked over at me, and he was like, can I put you on? And I was like, hell yeah, like, let's just start it off. And I we went to the library or something to read while we were stoned, look at art books like Brian did. And then my friends started texting me, and they were like, we're so sorry. And I was like, dude, I actually wrote that. Don't worry about it. And they're like, you wrote that whole thread? And I don't know what you're speaking of.
No.
And
so
my friends read this. And it was one of those things where I was like, dude, like, how many people even know me? Like, I only hang out with four people.
Right.
And then someone commented like, hey, Carolina Barlow has a beautiful body. And I was like, someone has a crush on me.
Uh-huh.
And my friend was like, oh, no, that's our friend. Our two friends were a lesbian couple. I was like, God damn it.
Come on.
Adam, Miranda. Yeah.
You don't have to tell the truth in that situation.
Exactly, exactly. Let me live in that mystery.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more True Romance.
I want True Romance.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to True Romance.
What do you hear from women, or what do you assume women are thinking, or what are your takes, basically, on what dating has been like, even though that's a pretty broad question?
They don't care. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, if they do, it is... I got divorced like 8 years ago, and so I was like thrown into that horror that is dating. And quickly I was like, oh, anyone who that is a factor is not somebody I want to hang out with. You know,
absolutely.
It just was such an immediate sort of like deal breaker. And because I was doing it online, they weren't contacting me. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah.
So it was
set up nicely that way.
So it was, you know, the filter is just the picture, you know, and just like, oh, nope, they're not going to be into it. But I don't know. It's strange how, for me, you know, it's come up on the podcast, but I've thought about that intersection of like when it happened and I think I was pretty codependent with my girlfriend. You know, I think she's my first girlfriend and we really went into it way hard. And then at a certain point, she's like, you know, I have to go to college. I think we're kind of young. We need to grow up a little bit. And I was like, no, you're going to leave me.
I'm going to take off your skin.
Yeah. And I was just clinging to that security that I had in that relationship too much. And so then I probably unconsciously assigned it to, you know, it wasn't that, yeah, she's smart and we need to kind of be apart. And if we're supposed to be back together, which we did get back together for a while, it would happen. I was just like, oh, it's probably because I'm bold and I'm skinny.
Right, you
know,
right.
That kinda, all that garbage that when your negative thinking comes in, it supersedes any information, like all the messaging, just like the years of messaging I'd gotten. I was like, no, you're great.
She loves
you, you know. It's strange how powerful, like, just the smallest negative kernel can be, you know.
Oh, my God. Well, I think women have it a lot with weight, and I feel like there's something to the fact that codependence is so the byproduct of insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
So I would build up a lot of people I was dating, like, they're a genius, but it was always compared to, like, they're a genius, I'm an idiot, and they're so handsome, and I'm, like, literal banana peel trash.
That's awful.
I mean, it's a style choice.
You should respect yourself and learn to love yourself, okay?
Yeah, we know this guy who's going to give you some great advice. If you just
he's going to email you.
Reach out to him.
I need another email. I wrote back being like, tell me more.
Do you like flat-chested boobs?
Yeah, whenever like a breakup would happen that I was especially codependent in, it was definitely not about the relationship. It was more about interpreted it as like a flaw. And I feel like you can find anything.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I feel like I have to, my daughter's 13. And so 13 kind of like, will have these flash point moments where her brain floods with sensitivity and insecurity and stuff. And we had a thing last night where I was kind of like giving her shit a little bit for how she doesn't share food. You know, I was like kind of joking. And then it just in a moment she started crying. And you know, started just, you know, really upset about it. And I was like, I'm really sorry. I'm really, really sorry. And it just made me realize like there was, she couldn't hear anything I was saying. She couldn't hear.
Yeah.
Her perspective on everything I was saying was coming from one perspective. And it's the same thing, you know, in a relationship. Sometimes if you really are feeling terrible about yourself, not terrible, if you're feeling bad about yourself, it's very hard to get out of that perspective. You know, you're just in a kind of depressive state. And so everything will be like, you're saying that, but you're only saying that because you're trying to make me feel better because it's true, you know. It kind of always links back to that. So yeah, it's tough, guys. So just give up.
I know, and that's what we've been trying to say on the podcast. My therapist actually told me, when I was in a relationship, like, please don't bring all of your fears to your partner because they can't do anything about them.
Yeah.
Whoa, and that's good advice.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be like, how do I look? How does this dress look? Does this dress look like shit? Because no matter what they said, I wouldn't hear it, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's or I would hear it through my fucked up filter.
Yeah, you're kind of putting someone in a no-win situation of like, how's this dress look? Looks great. Oh, you're just saying that because it doesn't look great. Wait, what? No. I gave you...
I used to be really uncomfortable with my weight. My weight fluctuates and I can get chubby and stuff.
Sure.
And I used to make fun of myself for it all the time. And at some point, some combo of watching Queer Eye and my wife telling me to stop insulting myself, I stopped making fun of my own weight. Mm. And then I lost weight.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
It's similar to Devin and I were just talking about, we did a Christmas rom-com episode, and we were talking about our obsession with Jack Black.
I thought
you were
going to say Crispin Glover.
A Crispin Glover episode.
I thought that too.
He was on?
I was like,
it's hard to date when you're insane.
But we were talking about our obsession with Jack Black, and so much of that is his ownership of his body. And like a line in School of Rock I love when he's talking to that chubby girl in class is like, he's like, yeah, I'm a little heavier, but I'm sexy and I love myself, and how attractive that made him. But it's sort of the similar thing where you hear stuff like that and you're like, yeah, I can't really internalize that because my insecurities are a lot deeper. But
it's a little reprogramming. I mean, it's, you know, it's just like it's taking your neural pathways and be like, no, go this way for a little while. And it's really hard to. I mean, I guess that's why, you know, meditation practice is like, it takes a practice. You got to do it for a while before you sink into like, oh, I kind of blissed out for a while, and you turn your brain off. It's the same.
Meditation's so hard.
It is.
It really is.
Yeah. But it's the same thing. It is. I used to shit on any kind of like aphorisms.
Surface.
Yeah. No, just I used to shit on people because I'm better.
Really? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody's got their thing. I put a tarp down.
Speaking of meditation.
Didn't know this.
Did I say meditation? I meant a shit fetish.
Defecation.
I meant shitting on glass tables.
Transcendental defecation.
Good Herald team name.
The Herald team name. But it's just, it's hard to undo programming, you know?
Yeah.
And, oh my God, it's so hard.
And it's like, and I do some, you know, I do some like program stuff like around, you know, stuff I grew up with. And one of the things they say is like, if you think about like you grew up in an environment for 40 years and you want that to change in, you know, a year of doing this, it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
like no, you are slowly changing it. But the best part is when you notice that you're changing it. So it's sort of like what you were saying about like, oh, I should feel insecure, but I don't. I should focus on that. You know, like that's what my power is.
Yeah.
I
think that's really interesting. I think something I've been thinking about recently, too, is that like my whole life is to learn how to be human. Like there's not really a deadline for me to figure out relationships or my own relationship to myself. Like this is going to be a lifelong process. So I've got time and I'm going to meditate like 10 years from now.
Yeah. I had that expectation of like, oh, you figure it out at a certain point, right? And then you're done. I asked my mom, it's like, when do you become an adult or when do you figure it out? She's like, you never do. And when she said that to me, I was like, what? Oh, God, no. But now I'm like,
no, what's the
she
point?
She was smoking on the porch.
Yes.
You never by the fridge. It was out front.
It never gets easier.
It never gets easier. But now I'm just like, oh, thank God. Like it kind of lets you off the hook because.
Yeah.
Because it also, if you have that attitude, you're like, oh, that means the rest of the world will never change and everything is fixed and I can sort of predict everything that's going to happen. It's like, no. That's as we've learned with this pandemic, this great teaching experience called the pandemic.
We've all had to look inward and we've all learned so much.
This stupid fucking pandemic. I'm so fucking sick of it.
It's really one of the dumbest.
It's the dumbest
both
fucking
dumb
thing.
And horrifying. It's you know what I mean?
It's the bad dumbest combos. Promotional rollout for a follow-up to Contagion I've ever experienced.
Also, you know, it's sort of it's a parallel to the Trump administration, which is, you know, the handshake of stupidity and terror.
I know, totally. Oh, my God.
Speaking so you're both laughing and you're like, oh, fucking hell. This really changes my philosophy about
my philosophy.
So my
That's
philosophy.
My philosophy.
I miss the gym. How about you guys?
Nope. I don't nope. have that experience.
Never really been.
Oh, I miss it so much. Oh my God. I miss it like more than anything.
I bought a treadmill because my daughter like started getting into exercise. And I also realized like at first I was like, I don't know if we can walk outside of the house. You know, I was like,
right.
So I was like, and my place is tiny. So like a third of our house is filled with this treadmill. And, but it is the best investment I've ever made. And, but I started out running and now I'm doing the same, like I'm doing a 45 minute like nerd speed walk.
Oh no, that's really good,
that's
for,
good
you.
For you.
Yeah.
Harley Pasternak, who is a super celeb trainer, shout out to Khloe Kardashian's Revenge Body. He says to walk 12,000 steps a day, which I've done once since I found that out. And it takes only half your day.
Yeah.
It's nearly impossible. I can't even like.
Wait, if I run 3 miles, is that 12,000 steps, you think?
No. I think it's like
it's
6 miles. Well, running's different. Yeah, running's different.
Yeah, you're
I run 3 miles.
The day I did it, it was 6 miles walking.
Wow.
6 miles? Holy shit.
Like, yes. Friggin' Forrest Gump.
I'm pretty wiped out after 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could say that.
What are relationship statuses? You mentioned, Brian, that you're a divorcee. Charlie, you mentioned that you have a wife.
That's right. We've been married. We just had our 6th anniversary a couple days ago.
I love that.
Yeah, nice. We've been together 10 years.
Yeah, and I have been dating. I'm with someone now. Like, I'm so I love her very much.
That's
nice.
Yeah, I met her August 20th, 2019. So,
okay.
I know. I was like pandemic.
Might be a little quickly. Pandemic?
No, but God damn, if I didn't, having just going through this with somebody, you know, is really great. But she and I met her on Bumble, good old Bumble.
Love.
And
that's a dating app. It's called Bumble.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
Charlie, you've been out of the game.
Oh, Charlie.
Oh, I met Camille before if there were dating apps.
Yeah. Yeah, I did that. I did a tiny bit of Tinder, and then I had better
the dark web. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the difference between Tinder and Bumble?
Bumble is the format is like the woman makes the first move. Yeah. So it's
sort of a nice like cocktail lounge, and Tinder is like the after hours club.
Yeah. Okay. Tinder's great. And then I did Raya for a while.
Oh, bad.
Raya is basically just like, how many Twitter followers do you have? What's your Instagram following? Okay, meet other people who are shallow. And
really?
Oh God, I met the
influencers.
Most, yeah,
come
music
on,
video directors.
This is real?
It's the worst. Yeah. It's the worst. But oh, I know, I do know a couple people who met their, you know, their significant others as a result. So you get lucky sometimes. But yeah. My girlfriend. I was on it on Bumble, like on and off for, I don't know, 3 or maybe 4 or 5 years. Just, ugh, God, it's awful. And she was on like Bumble.
Oh, Bumble,
And then she was on it. She went on like, that was her third date. And then she scored.
That's so sweet.
She scored.
That's nice.
Yeah, she's really lucky.
Yeah.
To not have a long experience with those apps.
Oh,
she missed out on the 4 or 5 years of hell.
Yeah, fascinating. That was my personal pandemic. Just
how was dating on Tinder before you met your girlfriend and Bumble?
I was working on People of Earth, so we shot 2 seasons up in Toronto, and a friend of mine was just like, "Just try it. Just go on a Tinder date." So the very first Tinder date I went on, I was like, well, let's meet a crazy person. And she was great. And we ended up hanging out that season that I was working up there. So that was a good experience. And then, but I just kept having better, it's sort of like dialogue with people is better on, I was meeting on Bumble. And I met some cool people there. And then I definitely had some weird encounters.
Tell us about your strange encounters. At least one.
Okay, so probably the worst one was, and I should have been like, oh no, this is not going to be good, but she just came in real fast, real hot, of just like, what we're going to do. And I was like, yeah, we should.
Well, like hooking up with her, you mean?
No, just like just what the date was going to be. You know, sometimes there are people who you should be really wary when people is like, I'm good at dating. Like, oh, no, no, that's not something you should be like bragging about. Like, I've done so many dates that I'm great at it.
10,000. It takes 10,000 dates.
Oh, yeah, 10,000 hours of dates. And so she was like, I've got these tickets to the Hollywood Bowl. You know, we can go see the Philharmonic. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. I mean, it's we won't really be able to talk or anything.
This is a first date?
First date. And so I was like,
that's pretty.
What?
That's a little. Yeah,
I know. And I was like,
that's a red flag.
I know. And I don't know why. I was in a very sort of like, say yes to whatever phase.
Well, you're an improviser. You have to yes anyway. What's going to, just to see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. But I would just be wary.
I was wary. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll meet you there. She's like, no, let's meet at the Gelson's and we'll shop together and we'll put together a little picnic.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
And I do. I think my response is like, no, I don't want to do that. Let's just meet there.
Wow. Good boundary making.
That sounds like hell.
Good boundary making. But I still went through with it. Like, I still was like,
did she buy snacks?
She bought crackers and cheese and all this like just stuff. And then we got there.
Did she expect you to pay for the crackers and cheese?
Yeah. Yeah, I paid for
it.
Yeah,
you got to Venmo me $28.
I didn't pay. You know,
oh, God.
And then I was like, okay, I'll meet you over there. She's like, no, we're going to drive together. And I was like,
why is she doing this? She's doing this to me at this point because I'm uncomfortable.
It just kept forcing.
I'm scared.
Yeah. And so.
Yeah, this is the ending in murder for sure.
Yeah. So there was a certain point where I was like, oh, this is, I'm just going to sort of have an outer body experience with this and see what happens. And to like what I was saying, like, it was like, I'm good at dating. We're driving over there and she immediately started talking about, she's like, oh God, I go on so many of these dates. I'm just so sick of it. Hoping maybe I was going to commiserate with her. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, maybe you shouldn't do it. Maybe you should take a break. She's like, no, you got to, I mean, you got, if you don't put in the work, you're not going to, you know, get the results. I was like, yeah, this I guess.
Oh my God. This is so insane.
So bad. And so then we get there and she has a kind of like the presentation is very practiced in a way, you know what I mean? She's got her dating face
histrionic,
on.
Maybe.
Yeah. Just the kind of like, it's like I'm. It's like you're going out with a hostess at a restaurant. Like you're not like this, mm-hmm. but this is how you're acting. We go there. We're watching the show and stuff. And then I checked out and I was like, I'm gonna go to the bathroom. And I just went to the bathroom and
just
I was like,
sat in the stall for a second.
I took a moment. I kind of hung out for a while and then I was like, I don't care anymore. And I came back and then it was over and I was like, all right, let's go. And we were walking back and she had a change too. And she said like, so I looked you up online. You've done a bunch of work. And I was like,
oh my God.
And I was like, oh, okay. And she's like, my friend said never to date a comedian. Said they're all crazy. So they're just like the worst person you can date is a comedian. And I was like, and I was like, I'm a comedian. You know that, right? She's like, yeah, I do. And I was like, all right. And I stopped talking. And then she just wouldn't stop negging. It was just negativity. Just a fire hose came out of her mouth.
And this is the person you're quarantining with now, right?
Yeah, this is the six. Yeah. I have my girlfriend.
Karen and behind you just moves to the side and she pops her
head. Yeah. Yeah. She's my live-in chef, but I call her my mistress. And then we drove
Bad
back.
Date, good chef.
Yeah. And then we went back to my car. She drove me back to my car because I was stranded with her. And
so bad.
So we pulled up and she did the thing where we stopped and she turned her body for that kind of like, so end of the
had
night.
Had a great time.
Yeah. Had a great time.
Wait,
can't
she
wait.
Wanted to make out or something? Is that
what
you're saying?
Yeah. And I just said like, no, God, no, no, I do not want any craziness on me. And I was just like, okay, bye. Thanks for that was nice to meet you. Bye. And I just, I hightailed it out of there. I just.
Was she hot?
Nope.
Wait, I have a question. Have you ever felt like, because I've felt this a few times, never to that extent, but that you've just had a bad like performance night in terms of a date?
I always, my rule of thumb was like, give them to, like, if they're nice, you know, or if there's something, if I'm like, well, maybe, I don't know. I would usually give people two chances, you know what I mean? And there's a lot of vetting that happened just in the texting where you're like, okay, you're funny, you can do this, you can da da da. Mm-hmm. But this one, it just
no, that's special.
It was too much. It really was.
Oh, that sounds bananas.
And then there was a lot of follow up text, apology things.
No.
Apologizing? Oh my god.
Yeah, she was like, I know, you know, no. That she didn't apologize, but she said like, hey, it didn't feel like we were vibing. But maybe we need to try again. Like, I don't know. It felt kind of weird, but, you know, let's give it
another.
Let's
go to the Santa Barbara Philharmonic on a road trip and stay overnight.
Yeah.
I think it might have been the Hollywood Bowl that cursed us. Yeah.
We need another bowl.
Yeah.
That is such an interesting approach to be like, that was really bad, but don't you think we should try it again?
Yeah. Like, yep.
What?
That's crazy.
Yeah. Because I do think sometimes you kind of like, you don't stick the landing on the first one, but you can kind of tell if there's, you know, room for improvement or whatever.
Of course. Yeah. I think that you're so nervous on a first date, or at least I am for whatever reason. I've had a hard time being casual, and I always said to boyfriends later on, I'd be like, don't you want to watch a DVD of the first date and just see like how we were trying to present ourselves and like,
yeah,
because it's so different until you start meeting someone like you're so guarded. And
well, the girl, like with my girlfriend now, we both admitted we were really nervous on the first date.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it was just sort of, I was like, okay, you're cool. I like you.
That's what my therapist tells me to do.
Yeah.
Because like I have such insane fear of, not insane, but just like intense fear of public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It affected me on first dates also, because like it was kind of like public speaking. Like I just would get nervous when the person would ask me a question and like not know what to say. And she... my therapist still always is like, just tell people you're nervous, like, mm-hmm. just be honest and vulnerable. And it really works. And also, like, I feel like it gives, I always have like this panic feeling, like my body is full of cortisol or whatever, like it's an actual dangerous situation that I'm in.
Yeah.
And then once I say I'm nervous, I'm like, oh, I'm safe, like this person is responding well, unless they don't respond well.
Yeah.
Like, and then I'm not
buckle
safe.
Up.
Yeah.
Well, you better be nervous.
Yeah.
Brian and Charlie, when did you realize the Camille and Brian, your girlfriend, when were you like, wait, this is really good? Like, this is, I like this a lot.
The first second I saw her.
No!
Yeah.
Oh, no!
She was in line at UCB, and I was like, that is the hottest chick I've ever fucking seen.
Oh, my God.
And so I went
up. She's going to listen to this, and you're going to get laid.
Yeah, I not to draft on that, but I genuinely had the same thing.
Oh, Brian, shut up.
I nice saw Camille try. And I was like, oh, she's taken, so I'll take this other girl. No, I was like, I saw her, I was waiting out front of the restaurant we were going to meet at, and I saw her down the block, and I was like, oh my God, I hope that's her. Please let that be her. And then it was...
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and then she said... she had the same thing. Like,
oh my gosh.
And then you were like, I wanted it to be you, shop girl.
Yeah.
I don't know if that reference lands with this audience.
If it doesn't,
I read shop girl. I didn't see the movie though.
I laughed like I knew what you were talking about.
You've Got Mail. Charlie, you're not going to get laid anymore.
I saw You've Got Mail.
Well, it's hard because there's a lot of Meg Ryan, Tom.
I saw Sleepless in Seattle.
Not my favorite. Similar. I really recommend a You've Got Mail rewatch because it's a real joy. It's a real joy.
Nora Ephron's, some of her finest.
Oh, yeah.
Her big
hit.
Showed me one of those. I forget which one.
Yeah.
And then, Brian, what changed in terms of what you were looking for after a divorce? Like, how did your... I mean, obviously, you're not looking for the inverse of anyone you've been with, but how do you think your philosophy changed?
My philosophy changed because I had to do a bunch of work on myself.
Right.
And I'm still, you know, we co-parent, so we have to be good with each other. But I love my ex. And I never wanted to sort of feel like, oh, that was a huge mistake. You know,
of
that
course,
was a huge waste of my life and stuff, which some people do. They're like, erase that, you know.
Right.
But the reason some of this, the reason that she and I came together, the reasons were that we were kind of trying to fix each other. And so it kind of comes back to that thing of like, you genuinely have to be good with yourself to be good for somebody else.
Right.
And it just, it was a kind of a long process of learning that. But I do feel like even now our relationship continues, and I, you know, I, not saying I'm a different person, but I know that we were together for a reason, and she helped me grow, and she probably helped me grow to allow me to meet my present girlfriend.
Yeah.
So, you know, there, I don't really think, and I'm glad after my divorce that I wasn't like, oh God, I just want to erase it. It's so embarrassing and stuff. I was just sort of like, okay, we tried really hard and it didn't work. So we can't blame each other. We have to sort of like work on our own stuff. And she helped me do that. And I think I've helped her do that too, even after the divorce, which is nice.
Devin and I talk a lot about how sort of as a society or how whatever, how our brains work with narratives, we very much have a results-based idea about relationships.
Yeah.
And so it's not really experiential. I mean, I have a hard time being in the moment in general, but I kept on thinking in relationships, like, I'm scared to break up. I hope we don't break up. I hope we don't break up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, inevitably we did, but all of those relationships are valuable. And I have pleasant memories with most of them.
Yeah.
In terms of looking back and thinking like, yeah, that changed me. And I would never, you know, I think it's what the whole Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind movie is about. Like, of course, I don't want to lose that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a really healthy perspective to have in terms of like, that's not a failure. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
I talk about divorce a lot that way.
Yeah, I just didn't want to, you know, looking back on it, I didn't want to sort of feel like I'm just going to focus on the negative things.
Right.
I have a friend who recently like got married and then jumped right into getting divorced like a month later.
Damn, really?
Yeah. But I knew it was coming because he like had known her for like 3 months and stuff. And it was just, but I was just supportive. I was like, oh, you know what? I mean, just trust that, that this is just an experience and it doesn't mean the sort of like that you made a massive mistake. It's just sort of you know. But he was really beating himself up, just sort of like, you know. Anyway.
Do you think if you and your ex were able to fix each other, like if you, I don't know if there were specific instances or specific behaviors or things about each other that you wanted to fix about each other, do you think if you had, the relationship would have worked? Or do you think that was just kind of a distraction from the core, that the relationship wasn't meant to go past a certain amount of years?
I don't know. I don't know if anybody could really answer that. The way I feel about my girlfriend is so so excited and happy and relaxed and present, you know. And I felt like in my other, you know, in my marriage that I wasn't present a lot. And I, you know, I honestly sort of remember like that. I think I was a little codependent in my decision to get married. I was sort of like, well, we've been doing this for a while. I guess I should do this. Do I genuinely feel like this is the right move? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what my own feelings were. And I didn't have a relationship with my own intuition about stuff. Again, I think it's symptomatic of just like, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing,
right,
in a way. And that sounds like I'm cheapening the experience or the relationship,
no,
which I'm not. But it is a little perspective on like, I think it could have benefited from a little more honesty, you know, and not the kind of and honesty that would have started conversations. I think we avoided a lot of conversations, you know, that's bad. Avoidance is bad.
Charlie, I had a question in terms of, like, you sound like you're in a happy marriage. Do you think getting married changed your relationship in a sort of way where you were like, okay, this is different? No. Yeah.
I mean, we had a fucking kick-ass party. We got a lot
That's
of great
sort of
pictures.
The goal. Yeah.
But nah, I was committed before. I didn't feel like more or less committed. I mean, I like having a wedding ring and I, you know, but no, I don't think so really.
Yeah.
Beyond getting to have like a really cool shared experience with a bunch of our friends and stuff.
Right.
Would you be okay if you guys hadn't gotten married? Like, would you be okay to just be like, yeah, this is just my partner?
Oh yeah. Like long term. Yeah. I'd be fine with that. But I mean,
it's a sin, but.
Besides the religious implications.
Uh-huh. You'd be fine with it. God
would
not.
No. So fine with it.
And Satan would be waiting.
Well, it was just, but it's like, I would rather be married than not because I don't know. We just had this great time and wedding, and you know, we had a crazy ass wedding. I had people come up to me at my wedding and go, tonight was the best night of my life.
I love that. Wait, so tell us a little bit about your wedding.
It was in New Orleans.
Love.
Camille's mother's side of the family is from New Orleans. And so she had an aunt, grandma, cousins, stuff there. We've been going to New Orleans every Thanksgiving the whole time we've been together, except obviously now in the pandemic we didn't. But we got married in a courtyard behind an old pharmacy that is now a museum. And it was very beautiful. Our friend Brian Finkelstein, who maybe...
Oh, cool.
You guys know he married us. Bunch of friends there. And then we had a second line. Do you guys know what a second line
is? Yes.
What is it? I don't know.
It's a brass band. So we had a brass band coming.
Sort of like
marched.
A parade. Yeah.
It's a parade. And then we marched to the hotel we were all staying at in this like 12 block parade. Camille knew how to put it together. She like paid some cop $500 to set it all up. So we had like a cop on a motorcycle leading the parade.
That's great.
And so everybody in the wedding marched down the street into the hotel, and it was just a total blast.
That's cool.
That's so cool. New Orleans is definitely a great place to get married.
That was one thing my wife and my ex and I were both like, we had a great wedding. Like people were really into it. Yeah. Nice. But it wouldn't seem like it wouldn't be because from the, and I'm not exaggerating, the moment the first guest showed up, it started to pour rain. And then as the band with the very last people that left, we had this place in up in the Catskills. They were like packed up and they're like, all right, bye. And they drove off and they're waving. And then like the sun came out, like the second everybody was gone. But there was
That's
something,
so
there's something about it, about being like, just like under this downpour that people were so like hunkered in and like the after party, people were going insane. And it was great.
It's
like
a movie moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I do think like the ceremony of that stuff is important, you know.
Oh yeah,
you know, not in a validating like in the eyes of God, but in a validating way of just like, yeah, this is something to celebrate, you know, this is something to.
But you had a Wiccan ceremony.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of like goat blood, and you know,
you had the big Wicker Man.
Hard to find a virgin, but we found
the Babadook.
The Babadook was there.
He's cool, though. He's a good DJ, the bottom dude.
Good DJ, yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Two Bald Men.
I want true romance.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
We are back with True Romance, talking to men, M-E-N. Get used to it, okay? We're broadening.
And they're straight, S-K-R, number 8.
Well, we really can't forget that you guys are bald, and that's really why we had you on.
Yes.
Most what? Well, let's get back to that.
Yeah.
Is bald care a thing, like skincare?
Yes.
Yes, and we. Absolutely. I think we both only recently learned about that.
You draw a smiley face on your head.
Yeah, I know.
I had a skincare routine, but then when we had Karamo on, I enhanced it even more.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure he had all of the tips.
Yeah,
he good tips, and he gave us our first swag.
Yeah,
he came into your home.
Oh, and the swag is so good, so good.
Yeah, he gave us his products.
Yeah, what do you recommend?
Well, you got to wear a hat.
You got to wear a hat.
Got to cover it up, and especially
for summer, every day. For sunscreen. Okay.
Oh god,
every day. Every
otherwise,
day.
You end up with like those horrifying little dots.
Yes, and then if you want, like Karamo's product that we both have is called Mantle, and there's a lotion you can put on your head.
Yeah.
And if you put True Romance, you get 20% off. Just
we wish. So I guess I wouldn't know what it's like and what my insecurity would be like if I had that. And it probably is like the type of thing where it's like, oh, does this look bad on me? It does. Mm-hmm. What? Like, I've definitely done that. So,
yeah.
You never say yes to that question.
Yeah, I know.
Why?
Yeah. How do you cue it up? You'd be like, well,
you lie.
Yeah, or do you put it back as like, well, how would you feel if you were losing your hair? Like, no, oh my God.
Don't do that.
I know.
Does this look bad on me? No, it looks amazing.
But even like Ayanna Pressley, I don't even think of her as a bald woman. I just think of her as a really beautiful woman.
Yeah.
You know, totally, and I was thinking about that while I was listening to your pod. Like, oh, I don't think of it as a deficit in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, I mean, and Devin and I have talked about it with height too. Where if I met a guy who was like hot, I mean, I think about Sex in the City always, but Samantha dates a short guy who's just really yes. like sexual and like powerful. And I would never be like, Devin, I met someone, but
he's short.
Yeah. Like I would just be like, oh my God, I met someone.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd be like, did you really though?
I'd be like, we don't want to go down this road again, Carolina. Really?
His name is Babadook.
What if you went out with a guy and found out he played stand-up bass?
Okay, you know what?
Wait,
I can do
what's
it.
What's stand-up bass?
Well, we
bass that, that looks like a cello.
Yeah,
Devin.
Yeah, that was a jazz guy from Sex and the City. He had like a 2-hour.
Oh yeah, that guy was so crazy.
Oh my God!
And creepy.
Wait, the guy was like, he like held her hand and was like, "I'll play you like
my bass or whatever." Yeah.
Yeah, that guy was terrible.
That dude was a fucking creep.
We had Alice Wetterlin and her boyfriend, who is a.
Oh, we talked about this. That's
yeah, cool. But we had an he's upright. He's an upright stand-up bassist who is bald. So he's got, you know, he's got the two strikes against him in some circles.
Yeah, but he fucking owns it.
Yeah, but he, yeah. And that was her point. It's like, he doesn't give a shit. And that is the most attractive thing in the world to me.
Yeah.
You know, because, and I think she literally said, like, he just has confidence. And so I'm like, oh, yeah. This guy, no worries. That's great. You know, and it's not, and it's, I don't think it's a confidence thing of like, ooh, there's such a power. Ooh, oh my God. You know, right, it's more just like
magnetic.
It probably is just like, oh, thank God. I don't have to deal with your shit. I could just hang out with you.
Yeah. And what has surprised you about Bald Talk in terms of how people have reacted?
You mean the massive following that it's
Yeah, like,
engendered?
Do you have men's rights activists being like, yes!
Yes!
No, thank God we haven't heard from those people. But, yeah. I was surprised by it. I've always felt fine being bald. No problem with it. I had no idea when we started the podcast what a wealth of feelings were going to come out of people. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what was surprising for me.
Yeah. 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 Likewise. And it's always when people come on and they are genuinely like, hey, thank you for doing this. Like, you know, my immediate response is like, I'm going to make a joke and sort of downplay that. But now I'm like,
cool. Idiot. Yeah.
Yeah. Shut up, Baldy.
No one says that to us.
Nobody. I mean, it is, but this is like the most human conversation possible. I mean, everybody.
It is crazy.
Everybody struggles with this stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And it just from the, I mean, when I was in ninth grade and I started to date my girlfriend, my friend, he was like, oh, thank God, dude. I thought you were gay. You know, back when that would be
that was a thing.
That was a thing. I was like, oh, okay, well, I don't care if I was, but he was like, you know, I was worried there for a while that maybe you're going to be gay. I'm not friends with that guy anymore. But it just was like, I remember being shamed. At, like, he was shaming me for taking my time to figure out and find somebody that I liked. You know, I just felt all this pressure of like, I guess I should like someone even if I don't like them. And, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah. I have a friend whose son is so cute. He's like 18. He's adorable. And he got alopecia. So, you know, no eyebrows, totally bald, but still just so handsome. And I am. And I think he has insecurity about it, even though he has a cute girlfriend who, if you see them in pictures together, she looks like cha-ching, like stoked to be next to him.
Yeah.
But I think about this and how cool it is to have a dialogue around it.
We should have that dude on.
Yeah, he's a real sweetie. He just helped me move.
Hook us up.
What would you tell a new baldy out there if you have any? I mean, it sounds like it might just be, hey.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah. I say just own
it. Stop making a big deal.
Yeah. I'd say own it. And also, like, if you grieve it a little bit, that's okay too. You know, I think there's a little bit of like, oh, you should just snap into acceptance and stuff. And it's like, you know.
Yeah. Right. It's okay to grieve it for sure. But I mean, any new baldies out there heard it on this podcast. You just said, hotter to be bald and confident than to try and hide it.
So. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Get used to it. And I mean, we talk about this a lot, but I always think like, and it sort of speaks to what Brian was saying earlier, like a new turnoff I have is someone who's not really into me. Do you know what I mean? Like, totally. It sounds sort of weird, but I'm like, oh, if you don't really like me, all of me, how I look, etc., then like it probably won't
get
work
the fuck
out
of here.
Yeah, you know, like, let's not waste our time with someone who wants just like pieces of us or just wants to be with someone.
Totally. Yeah. If you ever have to convince someone to like you, then that relationship in any form is never, it's not going to be great. You're just like,
totally. You got to find your Harry.
Yeah.
You got to find your Harry. I thought you meant when Harry met Sally. And I was like, yeah,
no,
that too.
And I thought you meant somebody who has hair. I thought you meant someone with hair.
You got to find
someone very hairy.
No, I really liked what you said. I think Brian said it about if someone isn't into you because of your baldness, you don't want to be with them anyway. Totally. Like, I think that's true for so many different things.
Oh, totally.
Like, I'm kind of like a needy person. So if someone doesn't want to be with a needy person, they wouldn't want to be with me. So I don't have to put on like this guise of like, I'm cool. I'm down needy, with whatever.
It's so funny because like that is probably literally what all of our parents have said to us is like, well, who needs them if they don't see how wonderful you are? But
I know,
you know,
my
when,
parents didn't tell you that when, shit. My dad said, fuck you, you little asshole.
They're right. You are an asshole.
Devin talks about that a lot because I mean one of my favorite things about her, and I don't know if it's her Boston heritage, but it's like she can be very like cut dry.
So you can be like, hey, Devin, are you mad at me? And she'd be like, no, why? Instead of like, girlfriend, of course not.
Right.
Oh, boo. Yeah.
But Devin, you've said that, like, you've had people in your past who have been like, you're so cold. And it's sort of like, oh, then you don't want to date me because I can't like plaster on a smile to make you more comfortable or change that part of my personality. That's not going to be like coddling.
Yeah, I think that's really true.
I'm just going to try to learn to respect myself and love myself. And I got an email from a guy recently that really helped me
really hit that
see the light
for
on
you.
That.
It's currently taped to my face. Guys, we can't thank you enough for coming on the pod. This was a really great conversation.
This is awesome.
I enjoyed it.
It was
and,
so fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You're always welcome back on True Romance whenever.
Anytime. I want to do a Sex and the City deep dive with you guys.
I know. Please. I really wish we got to your Aiden thoughts because I feel like we've had a similar Aiden evolution, but maybe you're just at a different place on your Aiden path than I am.
This is yet again a thing that I can't join in the conversation. A lot of times, Charlie will start to talk about sports or Sex and the City and stuff, and I'm like, I have no rep. I gotta get into this show because it seems very.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I know.
It's so great. It's so good.
And terrible and poorly aged sometimes, but it still slaps.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
no, it's
sure.
such a good binge. It's like so light and fun and like new journey every episode.
Oh, wow.
It's funny because, go ahead.
It's fucking hilarious. Like people,
yeah.
for some reason, it's some kind of baked into our culture sexism. People are like, oh, four women, that won't be funny. It's like one of the funniest comedies ever made.
That's so funny. I totally agree. Love this episode where Samantha's hooking up with a guy who uses baby talk in bed. It's so awful.
So awful.
And then he like locks himself in a bathroom when she points it out. And she's like, get out here right now. We're in the middle of a conversation.
Oh, yeah. Then she starts like babying him. Like she's his mother.
Yeah,
that's
right. Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I don't fit in.
Remember that? Yeah, and then remember season four.
Remember how
three
she had shoes and clothes and then they went and had a drink.
Oh, so you've watched it.
Yeah, they had drinks.
Okay. Wait, you get it.
No, it's shopping. So funny because I hate sports analogies so much because I never understand them and I find them so frustrating when people just throw them out like I'm going to get them. But me and my friends definitely do Sex and the City analogies. Like when Devin's boyfriend asked her to quit smoking, we're like, oh yeah, so that's the Aiden storyline, right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Next, we'll do a deep cut with Charlie Sanders. Brian, you'll be hastily uninvited.
Cool.
Yes.
Maybe I can call in and give you guys advice.
Unless you decide to commit yourself to, you know, learning more.
Okay.
About women.
Because it's not just about Sex and the City. It's learning more about women.
I just don't like
women.
I don't like sex. That's one thing I should mention. I've never had sex. I will never have sex.
Oh, yeah.
It's disgusting.
What about cities?
I like to shit on people. I don't like to put things into people. Ugh.
Thank you again, guys. And
thank
we'll
you.
Talk soon.
All right.
Thanks
thank
for having
you.
Us. Bye.
And those were two gentlemen who I truly had so much fun with.
Same. And the last time I said that was on one night in Fiji, if you know what I mean. Just kidding.
She's never even been there.
I don't even know if it's a real place or it's just on a water bottle. Guys, thanks for listening.
Okay. Yeah.
Carolina's had a brain fart, but thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you so much for tuning into True Romance. Devin, I love you.
Love you, Carol. Bye.
All I ever wanted was a little love. I want true romance, it's true. True romance, it's so romantic. Love me, baby, don't leave me hanging. I want true.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.